Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
The teams eliminated from the NCAA tournament yesterday are bound to be disappointed. Still, every one of the players on each of those teams has experienced many times the elation of winning. The same cannot be said of an awful lot of young men who have played basketball at the California Institute of Technology, home of a losing streak of more than two decades, during which Caltech has come up short against conference opponents in 240 consecutive games. I'm sorry. Rick Greenwald has made a film about basketball at Caltech. It's called Quantum Hoops. When I had the opportunity to speak with him this week, I began by suggesting that perhaps the best way to introduce listeners to the situation he encountered at Caltech would be to play a scene from the film in which we first hear from Roy Dow, the current coach at Caltech, and then from the film's narrator, David Duchovny.
The number of valedictorians on the team this past year was 8. The number of players that played high school varsity basketball is 6. 6 is a big leap for us from 2 years ago when we only had 2 players.
What these players lack on the court, they make up for in the classroom. They represent a student body that is widely considered to be among the brightest in the world. Nearly every player had a perfect math score on their SATs, and with an uncompromising admissions policy, they are the most academically elite team in all of college basketball.
That situation that you're exploring, high school valedictorians outnumbering high school basketball players, is a little surreal. And quite a contrast to Duchovny's dry, matter-of-fact delivery. Is that why you wanted him to narrate the film?
Oh, for sure. The initial instinct was to get a so-called geek icon, and he was, you know, the X-Files star. But the dry humor part, that you know, the X-Files show itself, every other episode was either something with a little comedy spin or something serious, and the film is definitely a mix of that.
I'm just curious about whether there was ever a point in reading the narration where he looked up and said, can this really be true?
Well, he had seen the film a couple times beforehand, but yeah, and the coach was actually at the record, so I went there and saw it for myself, and it's for real. They did lose, and they do lose badly continually, and they did it for 21 years, and it's surreal, to say the least.
It's very nice to be the most academically elite team in college basketball, I'm sure. But obviously what attracted you to the Caltech Beavers was their status as an exceptionally futile team. When you approached them, how did the coach and the players feel about having their futility documented?
They were a little bit nervous. Roy, the coach, he's always open to somebody publicizing the team just for exposure, because he's trying to get the word out that they do have a team, for one, and that he's looking for players. And essentially, if you can get into Caltech, which not many people can, you get to play on the team. And the players themselves, there was an article that had come out prior, and they weren't exactly happy about it. It made them kind of look a little silly, of course. And they were nervous. Here's a guy now coming with a camera. It's one thing to be in print, but now you get to show us, you know, visually what's going on here. And so it took a while. I had to convince them, you know, it's not a reality show. I'm not here to make fun of you. I approached it thinking, well, it was kind of the comedy angle, and I didn't realize there was incredible depth of history and accomplishments there, and that some of their athletes have gone on to do great things. That part I did not expect. My intention wasn't to mock them or make fun of them. The comedy's sort of inherent. And they know that too. They're well aware of what their status is in the world. One of the players has a comment. He once said, you know, I'm the worst player on the worst team in the country. It kind of makes me wonder sometimes what I'm doing.
Well, your determination not to ridicule them notwithstanding, the film does open with one of the great sequences of all time in terms of basketball ineptitude. They must have, I mean, the first few minutes, they must have thought, my God, what have we let ourselves in for here?
Yep. I was scared to death our first screening, and the coach, again, had seen it a couple times himself and had signed off on it, and I was nervous. I thought some guys were going to walk out of the room. In fact, one of the alumni screenings we had at Caltech early on, a former player was there. He came up and he said, I almost got up and walked out. I couldn't believe what this was going to be. He's like, I'm so, so glad I stayed, because, you know, it pays off in the end. And that was really for the person who doesn't really know the story. That's what that was all about, to show where they're going. You really need to see where they've been, which is all the bad basketball.
Well, this sequence that we're talking about, of course, is players falling down, you know, balls bouncing around the gym like pool balls on a pool table with no particular recipient anywhere in sight, this sort of thing. And I have tossed out some numbers as well, but give us a sense of just how bad this basketball team has been.
Well, 2 years prior to when I was following them, they were losing by an average of 60 points a game, on average. Some of the games they lost by 70, 80, 90 points. There's a score, 137 to 15 or 20. And that, I mean, that's a real score. And that's what do you do when you're the five worst players on the team? The coach has no worse players to put in to try and alleviate, you know, the big, huge gap. And
you go to four or three.
Right? Well, I don't think the league would allow them. And that's part of the tricky thing about it. At certain points during the streak, they had talked about dropping Caltech from the conference. Caltech's a founder of that conference. It's the SCIAC conference in Southern California. They once played UCLA and USC, and those schools obviously went on to bigger and better things and went to the Pac-10. But, you know, it's hard to kick Caltech out of a conference they co-founded. And that was the past. I started picking up with the team as they narrowed the gaps down to an average of about 20 points a game, which is something incredible.
Well, UCLA and USC went on to bigger and better things as long as we're talking about basketball. But in terms right. of patents and Nobel Prizes and things like that, they couldn't mm-hmm. touch Caltech. And maybe you knew when you began this project that you would be interviewing a number of distinguished scientists and mathematicians. Did you anticipate how excited they would be about basketball?
Had no idea. Roy had clued me in that he had a couple Nobel Prize-winning physicists and chemists who kind of supported the program. And one of them is in the film. His name's Bob Grubbs. He actually co-won his Nobel Prize with an MIT professor as well. And he was very supportive. He's supportive of the program. And he wished, you know, part of the story is the coach can't get anybody to pass admissions. They refuse to let anybody in, period, who doesn't qualify academically. And he's one of the guys who kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, I really wish we have guys who have maybe not a perfect SAT score, but close to it, and they weren't the valedictorian. They were the next in line, and they were a varsity basketball player, not a star even, just a varsity basketball player, and they won't let him in. And the joke is that he had basketball on his application, and that was a knock because maybe he's not going to spend enough time on the computer. He's going to be spending too much time on the court. You know, I mean, they've actually had that comment.
In one of your film's more moving moments, we hear about Caltech breaking its last long losing streak. The year was 1979, and the Beavers had just won a game against a conference opponent for the first time in 99 games. The memories are provided by two members of that team and the coach of the losing team. NBA fans may recognize his voice, future Hall of Fame coach Greg Popovich. Let's listen to that.
I just remember the buzzer going off.
It was just such a shock.
We lost the game, and I provided a great deal of enjoyment for about 15 or 20 people. I can remember that for sure.
We were all jumping around. I was hugging Joe Zazadinsky, and I remember we were just jumping around like little kids.
You know, I wish we could say we were, you know, good winners, you know, and polite to the other team and everything. Perhaps if we had won a second game, we would have handled it better and we would have been calm and said, you know, nice game. You guys tried hard. We were just having a party.
Three people I knew were in the stands that game, but it didn't matter. We won a game, a real game.
I guess the Caltech guys who played in that game could be forgiven for celebrating on the court. I wonder if any of them could have anticipated how rare those celebrations would be.
They knew. The only ones who don't know are the freshman members of the team. Every freshman comes in saying, well, before I'm done, I'm going to win not one. I'm going to win two or three and, you know, things like that. And we're talking just games, not being over 500 right. or a championship. Right. We're just talking a game.
I'm going to win two or three in my 4 years.
And then by the time they get to be a senior and they realize they haven't won one yet, the pressure is really on. And that's where the big celebration comes from. A regular season game, that's one of the things that makes this story so unique. There's no school in the country that will have a championship celebration after a single regular season win that means really nothing to anybody else, not to their opponent or anybody.
With about 18 people watching, too.
Right. At a Caltech home game, I've been there, and there were 50 people. It was a preseason game. There were 50 people from Chicago coming to support their team, and there were three from Caltech. So even when they're the home team, they're not necessarily having an advantage.
As you followed Caltech through the 2006 season, to what extent did you become a fan of the team?
You know, I became a fan, I think, by the end of day one, to be honest, when I realized something else was going on here. I went in with the same expectations everybody else did, which is, this is a team, it's kind of a joke, it's just comedy. They must not care. Who is this coach? He must not care. And it didn't take a couple hours to see how they practice and how hard Roy pushes them. I thought, wait a minute, I wouldn't expect this. I would expect it to be really casual. How can you keep going game after game after game after game and practice after practice, knowing you virtually have no chance? You know, and what is it that drives them? And I got really excited to start exploring other angles on the story as well. And over the course of a couple of months, things just kept popping up. The Popovich story really blew my mind. I almost fell out of my chair. I was interviewing another coach, and he brought up the Greg Popovich thing, that Caltech beat them. I mean, Caltech's won two games in the last 35 years, and one of them was against a future NBA coach, Hall of Fame coach,
Hall of Fame
championship coach. You know, I mean, my eyes were popping out of my head, and this is ridiculous. And then he agreed to be interviewed.
Toward the end of the 2006 season, there is considerable tension surrounding the Caltech team. They're losing games by 9 or 10 points rather than by 50 or 60. And beyond that, there's some talk of eliminating sports altogether at Caltech. Let's listen to what some of the players had to say as that season was running out.
We're capable of winning, and it's just a matter of breaking through this invisible wall, because I think that we are good enough to beat other teams.
I feel like the real defining moment will be when we can get a win, and each and every one of us can do our part to get that.
We're getting closer to winning, and so that's tough, knowing that we can win now. Even if we don't win, I know we gave our best.
I think it'd just be this big accomplishment that I would remember for the rest of my life.
Other people wouldn't be able to jeer at us so much anymore if we could finally get that win.
Now, I don't want to discuss the result of the final home game of the 2006 season. People could look it up on the internet, I suppose, but I'm sure you're hoping they don't.
Yeah, I hope. Don't look it up. It's a great surprise, and it's real. That's the best part. It's as good as any ending to a sports film you've seen. It's as intense. Some guy said it's as intense as any Super Bowl or World Series game I've ever seen. And when I was there filming it, I was thinking the same thing.
Rick Greenwald is the director of Quantum Hoops, the Caltech basketball story. The film will be showing next week in Boston and in Seattle, and in limited theaters in Texas in April. For a more thorough listing, visit our newly redesigned website at onlyagame.org. Rick, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
My conversation with filmmaker Rick Greenwald will be featured on this week's program. I'll also be updating the action in the NCAA men's tournament, and we'll have a story about the other men's basketball tournament, the NIT, which used to be a considerably bigger deal than it is now. Beyond that, we'll check in with the Toronto Blue Jays as they wrap up spring training. We'll hang with rugby fans, particularly fans from Wales, as they follow with growing delight the recent Six Nations rugby tournament. And we'll hear from a lot of listeners who feel Charlie Pearce should stop talking about skiing unless he can think of something nice to say. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program on our newly redesigned website, onlyagame.org.